On this episode of Risk.
One day, I am going walking through the alley, and I look up in a damn tree, and I see a monkey in Church Hill, in Richmond, Virginia, in the city. What the hell? Is it real monkey?
Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is one of our conversation story episodes, where someone tells me a story and we chat about it. Simple as that. Now, if you want to watch this episode, there's a link to that in the show notes, but all of our audio episodes going back over 15 years are at risk-show.com or wherever you get your podcast. Today, we're going to be hearing a story from my dear friend, Ray Christian. He told me this past March about some of the animals he spent time with as a young kid growing up in Church Hill, a neighborhood in Richmond, Virginia. And from there, we ended up kind of spiraling and swapping out all kinds of other stories with each other, you know, the way that friends can do, but animals, past, present, all that sort of thing. Now, I do have to warn you, though, that we do mention animal harm, animal abuse, and even animal death, you know, just as facts of life in these stories, especially, you know, when we talk about childhood and like half a century ago, some of these things happening. You can even hear a story where I am the bad guy, right? Or you can decide. So after the break, I'll be joined by Ray Christian sharing a story he calls Animals Past and Present.
We'll be right back.
There are days when you're hungry for McDonald's. Then there are days when you're big arch hungry for McDonald's. You'll get to know the difference. New Big Arch for Big McDonald's Hunger. Until 9th of September, from 11 a.m, participating restaurants only, subject to availability.
We're back.
Hey, folks, this is Kevin, and we're having one of these conversation-style stories today. This time we're doing it on video, so it's a little, you know, new for us, this new format. I have this strange-looking bandage on my head because I had basal cell surgery yesterday. The doctor said it's probably nothing to worry about, although I have heard from people who have to have this, you know, it pops up again and again for a lot of people of my fair skin especially. So we'll see about that. But the dermatologist, she did tell me that there was a real risk of one of my eyebrows being forever raised if they didn't get the stitches just right. And she said, there's good news, though. My face is so profoundly wrinkled that we can probably hide the scar deep within one of the gigantic wrinkles on it. So, folks, I'm so glad that I have a little respite from the from all the insanity of today, to be talking to our dear friend Dr. Ray Christian. Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man, compared to you. Damn. Bro, keep your ass out the sun, man.
Well, you know what it is? It's childhood. I used to deliberately burn myself. Damn. You know, back in the 70s, it was, you know, you're fair skinned. It looks better to have a tan. So just roast yourself. And I would put sun in, and I still use sun in. It's like a 1985 product. And I still am able to find it at certain parts of the world to like make my hair a little bit brighter, you know. But man. I think the childhood basal cell stuff is going to keep popping up.
Well, survive, man. Damn.
That's the name of the game nowadays, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least, you know, it won't no brain tumor or nothing.
Oh, well, Jesus Christ, no. This is that. This is the least dangerous of all of them, of all the cancers, you know?
One never knows.
Yeah. Maybe science has yet to discover. Maybe I'm a special exception.
Yeah, it's you. You're patient X.
Yeah.
You know.
Might be a relief.
All this shit comes from Kevin Allison. Yeah, this one gerb.
Oh, goodness gracious. So you're going to tell me a story today that I've never heard before.
Yes.
So this is kind of unique. Yeah, you know, we've been doing some experiments where people tell me a story that I've already kind of gone through some of it with them. But I like this because you and I have a sort of a friendship, you know, so I feel comfortable enough being like, yeah, tell me something I've never heard before.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the stories that I've told on Risk are centered around the little small area that I actually lived in, an area of Richmond called Churchill. I bring that up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the factors where some stories come from is the fact that I lived behind a funeral home.
Oh, I never
directly,
knew that.
Yeah, directly behind the funeral home. And you could look out the back window in the day or nighttime and see stuff like the bodies that had to come in through the back alley. Maybe two or three times a year, if you were looking out the window at night, at the right time, you might see the frosty window pane open. And then Bomber doing his work, smoking a cigarette, on the phone, talking shit to somebody, flirting with girls, kissing them up, feeling them up while they're at work. You know, it's late at night. And I'm like, you know, so us little kids, you know, we would see probably sometimes 5-6 funerals a day. You know,
wow.
It was the largest black funeral home in the city. And across from the funeral home was this big empty lot that we played in, we stumped in, we cut the grass down. So, you know, we saw funerals all the time. So, you know, as part of our play, we'd pretend to have funerals. You know, we would bury dead birds and rats and grasshoppers and, you know, whatever kind of animals we could find. But I and another kid, we were really into it more than other kids because when it came to, like, bigger animals, some kids didn't want to play because it meant you had to touch them, right?
Or, oh, yeah.
You know, various stages of decomposition you don't find on the street. So beyond our basics, you know, of small things, rat, hamster, chinchilla or something like, not chinchilla, but whatever that other mouse thing is, what's up, the pig, the guinea pig, whatever they is, right? Whatever them little them mousy things is, you know, somebody had a pet, some goldfish. You know, which we thought they were special that you could bury, but you really couldn't find anything exotic. Once got a squirrel, and I think once a rabbit. Because a lot of the animals, you know, they'd be destroyed, run over by cars. You know, that's the carcass. And then at a certain point, a lot of the kids in the little small circle of us that interacted together, you know, maybe a group of 7 or 8 kids, it changes frequently as we play around in the streets. But a lot of the kids, they didn't want to do that no more. It's like they got older, it got boring. And when you started getting to bigger animals, the biggest animal would have been like a big dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of tested, you know, how much people wanted to play. So people started ebbing out of the game. But me and this other kid were still into it, you know, to the point where we were trying to put up little markers. We used to find these posters that would be advertising different singing groups and bands coming. We'd rip those posters down, you know, and cut them up to try to make them look like tombstones. And it got to a point where it looked like a serious cemetery out there, man. And people would be bugging out, you know, walking by going like, oh, it's cardboard. You know, what the, you know, these dumb kids doing, you know? So there wasn't a lot of exotic animals, like I said. And people had a habit, an old habit of keeping peacocks in the backyard. They're
really?
Just like, yeah, they were a leftover remnant of another era.
Mm.
You know, these These peacocks probably originated probably around the 1900s. People of class and gentry would have these peacocks, and they survived, you know, the community turning into a ghetto, and there were few surviving peacocks. Usually they were in somebody's backyard. You find a feather or two. And because so many feral cats and dogs and crazy people who killed peacocks thinking they was turkeys, which that happened three or four times, you know, somebody killed it. So if they survived that, you know, people who had them, they kept them fenced in the backyard. Occasionally a peacock, you might pass a yard and there's a peacock on a fence, which would quickly, you know, jump back in the yard. But that rarely ever happened. So you heard peacocks, but you didn't see them. One day I'm walking and I see a peacock and a dog is just like chewing on it. You know, it's clearly dead. The dog's just, I went after that dog. I'm going like, wow, it's a peacock. You know, I can bury that. And so the dog, man, the dog wanted it too. You know, so we had a little struggle. He tried to pull it out and run with it and growl, but I got it from him. So I got this dead peacock, and it's all, like, spread out. I mean, it's fluffed out, pulled out, and fluffy, because the dog mauling on it and feathers all over the place, and me trying to get it up in my arms. But as I'm trying to walk with it, people on the streets are like, hey, what's that? Hey, boy. Hey, kid, hey, man, what's that? And I'm going like, nah, you know, people trying to stop me. So I started walking faster, and more people were like, what you got, man? What do you got? Hey, kid, what you got? Hey. And then more people, you know, started. And I had to run, you know. So I ran with this damn dead peacock in my hands, looking crazy, you know. Had to dodge people. I couldn't actually go all the way home because I knew they would come to my house. So I went through this whole, you know, trial of running with the peacock. But I did get it to the graveyard, and I buried him. And I wrote, you know, peacock. You know, real complicated, man. Yeah, this was also a period of time, and we're talking at the 60s and 70s. It was still legal to buy and acquire those small squirrel monkeys. I don't know what they're specifically called. The little ones you see on somebody's shoulder.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever the different varieties of them called. It was still a novelty as a classy thing to own one of these little monkeys. You got them at the fair, or you got them from a specialty pet shop that may have two or three. So if somebody had one of those monkeys in their house, it would be the thing. Everybody would want to come over to look at it. And when I was a kid, this was so big a deal that people we didn't even know, if we heard they had a monkey, you could go up to their door and knock and say, hello, can we see the monkey? Sure, come right on in. Because people with the monkey want to show off the monkey.
Yeah.
But it would go in several phases. Like in the early stages of somebody showing off the monkey's already traumatized, you know, for however they got it from, whatever country it came from, however starved it was. Mm. So phase one, the best scenario was you come over, there's a monkey in the cage, and he's in a corner just shivering, just looking at you, and he don't really do much. Occasionally, they'll be shaking the cage and doing stuff, and people poke him and putting stuff in there trying to get him to eat. That's phase one.
Mm.
Phase two, the monkey is going crazy. The monkey is masturbating. The monkey is throwing shit. The monkey is howling. The monkey is pulling his damn fur off. The monkey is just insane, you know, just going psychotic. Now, phase three, the monkey cage now is in the corner with a sheet or a towel over it.
Oh, wow.
So now you come over, you hear the monkey making no pitiful sounds.
Mm.
And if you were brave enough to lift the towel or sheet, you'd see this pathetic, crazy, insane creature just, you know, going like, you know, it would kill you if it got out of the damn thing. And the final phase is the monkey and the monkey cage would be on the back porch. And then you'd never hear about the monkey again. Now, knowing that, one day I am going walking through the alley and I look up in a damn tree and I see a monkey in Church Hill in Richmond, Virginia, in the city. What the hell? Is it real monkey? And so I was staring at it and I got closer and that monkey was hissing and he was wet and shivering and just scratching and going crazy. I was thinking, man, I'd love to have a monkey. I love animals. I probably could take care of it and I probably could get this monkey to calm down. And I love animals. I'm not going to be like those other people. I'm going to have me a monkey. He can go to school with me, maybe carry some books, you know, somebody to roll with, you know. So every time I got close enough to the tree to where I could thought I could get at the monkey, he just went crazy. There's no way in hell that monkey was like, if you touch me, I'm going to gnaw through your neck. So I didn't want to tell anybody about it because I didn't want other people to want to try to get the monkey. So I went home and I concocted this plan. And the plan was I was going to take the sheet and cover the monkey and just wrap him up and just bring him home, calm him down, right? And put him in a cage, wash him up, give him some food, and he'd be good to go. I even bought some bananas, you know, and anticipating, you know, what I was going to do with the monkey. But when I came back with the sheet, the monkey was gone. And you know, I looked all around a couple of days, maybe a week, no monkey. It's what I pretty much expected, you know. You know, like the monkey was going to wait for me, you know. So several weeks passed. And you remember I told you about those cardboard things that we used to use to make the headstones?
Yep.
I saw a couple of them in the alley in a pile. And I pulled some of them off and underneath it was clearly to me was the monkey, the dead monkey.
Oh,
at least I figured it was the monkey. The dogs had probably mauled on it. But, you know, the monkey sure got like little baby hands.
Sure.
You know, and you know, if you don't know. So. About that time, during the same time, there was a kid in the neighborhood that had went missing.
Oof.
I was walking by the alley one day and I heard some dudes saying, hey, man, how long do you think they're going to let that kid's body lay there before somebody do something?
Wow.
And I didn't say a word.
God damn.
And that's
holy
the story.
Shit. Whew, you hanging in there? Stick around, and I'll be back to talk with Ray a little bit more about his story, and we'll have more stories from each of us about cats, dogs, mice, goats, and apes.
We'll be right back.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy, customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
We're back.
When you heard rumors that there was a kid missing, did people say around about how old he was?
Oh, yeah. He was 3.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It was like a major upheaval in the community over this missing boy.
Oh, man. Yeah, and I wonder if someone somehow, or maybe even a dog, like you said, like got the idea to take the corpse to where there were other animal bodies.
Well, I didn't cover it up. I'm saying somebody covered it up.
Yeah.
So somebody's, well, clearly they saw it.
Yeah.
But it made me feel question whether or not it was the monkey.
Yeah. I guess you can't know for sure, right?
And therein lies the mystery. Yeah. Whether or not I found the monkey or whether or not... So, that's not quite the end of the story.
Oh, okay.
Because whatever it was, I bagged it up.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I buried it in the cemetery with the word monkey.
Oh.
So one day if some anthropologist, 300 years from now, I think early humans, you know, in Church Hill. Yeah.
Holy shit. Wow. And do you think... How old were you, would you say?
12.
Yeah. I wonder if, especially because you have so much experience with animals now, I wonder if you would be better able to identify from looking at the cadaver there, whether or not it was human or monkey.
I assume monkey. But then I started thinking about it differently because I heard that and people were just talking about it. And I was going back and forth in my head. At one point, I thought about digging it up, looking at it, and taking it back where it was, which would have been even more insane.
Yeah.
But such is the 12-year-old brain, you know, at work, you know. Maybe there's a lesson in there why you shouldn't own primates, you know, as an aside. But...
I mean,
they too much like people. If they lock your ass in a cage.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. There was a movie that came out a couple of years ago by Jordan Peele called Nope. And the central theme of it is we're all addicted to spectacle and... A lot of spectacle is created by taking living beings and kind of exploiting and abusing them. So the movie is about animal wranglers in Hollywood, and there's a storyline in the movie where this chimpanzee is on a sitcom on television in the 80s, and something sets that chimp off, and he literally just, like, murders the fucking cast of this sitcom. And it's a terrifying sequence. It's absolutely terrifying. But it was a match for a story that we've run on Risk. There's a story, a fella named Alex Wilkie, I think. His brother was an animal wrangler for reality television around the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and all. And his brother, like, was drunk or something one day, and he was like, oh, I can't make it to work. Can you take this monkey on set of this reality show of this, you know, this, you know, like, weird housewives of yada yada, you know, where they're all yelling at each other. So Alex goes, and he doesn't know anything about wrangling a goddamn chimpanzee. So he brings the chimp onto this set, and there's all this, you know, which it's a person's house, but, you know, they turn it into a goddamn set, right? And he's just on the lawn, and the monkey is not cooperating. He's not moving. And Alex kneels down, looks the monkey right in the eye, and points at him and is like, get the fuck moving. That monkey went just like in the movie Nope. Just like started beating the ever living shit out of Alex and all the film crew and actors and whatever were just like back the fuck away because they're like, I mean, this guy's supposed to be the wrangler.
Shit, man.
So it wasn't. And he was punching back as hard as he could. It wasn't until the monkey got him up onto like the porch and hurled him like 6 feet off a patio, right? So that he landed on the ground, and now the monkey's standing over him and looking down at him, and then everything was totally okay. The monkey was completely well-behaved because he had established, you don't look me in the fucking eye like that and demand, you know, what's going to be happening,
man,
here.
That's, man, Yeah, you can. Animals can fight back. My goat last year, goat almost tried to kill me.
Yeah.
Which, and several people, about 100 people a year get killed by goats, but.
Really?
Yeah, man, they can butt you and break your leg, snap, bust your kneecap, and they do butt you in the ass, and they will.
Uh-huh.
It's not just a TV joke. They'll butt you hard, too. You know, it's not funny when it happens to you. Like, I've seen this on TV before. When you get butted in the ass, you feel vulnerable, man.
Mm.
I mean, you hit the damn pavement and go like, you got me.
Mm-hmm.
So he had gotten to a point, my mistake, you can't really play with your male goats that haven't been castrated because they don't forget that. And when they grow up, they want to challenge you. It's just what they do. So you don't touch them. You castrate them or just leave the males alone. You pat up the females. So I wrestling with him, throwing him on the ground, you know, let them know who was boss, you know. I was trying to act out this whole Greek story about, you know, holding like the baby calf or whatever and shit and walking with it till it grow up. Whatever the story is, I was trying to do that with the goat, you know. Like, I was going to take videos. Here's Ray walk with this little baby goat. And then, you know, well, we never got to that point. Cause that's...
Wow.
He decided one day was the day. And you don't think I'm exaggerating. I heard a knock at the door. I look out the window. There's nobody out there. Pop, 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 pop.
Oh, no.
I open up the door. It's the damn goat. And that son of a bitch ran in, man, and charged me.
Wow.
He was butting me. And then he was putting his horns up under my crotch.
Oh.
And he was hurting me. And now it's like, this shit, I have to grab his horns and I'm fighting for my life. We are busting stuff up in the house. I'm holding him. He's throwing me around. I'm kicking him and beating on him, man. And I finally was able to drag him and kick his ass out of the house. I kind of threw him out because he only went like 5 feet and he like came back like, what, that's all you got? I went in the house. I'm going, I'm man. You know what I'm saying? You don't do that shit to me. I'm going to punish you. I'm going to take this stick and bash you in your head with it. You're going to be scared. I came out there with a stick. Ah! He's like, okay. I ain't scared. You know, I'm a goat. You hit me in my fucking head. It don't hurt. I'm not scared of you. And I was intimidated. So I had to get rid of Ernie. Had to go.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know what? You just gave me an opening. I've been afraid to tell this story the whole, like, 15 or so fucking years that we've been doing Risk. We always say that there's the I'm the bad guy stories that, you know, people are afraid to tell. My cat, Mr. Pooh, it's a very cute name for what was a goddamn dangerous animal. I got him from this rescue woman, and my husband Ariel, he was like, you got to get a pure white cat because they don't have that much dander. Well, what we didn't know is that pure white cats tend to have problems. They tend to have, you know, so anyway, he was deaf, right? He was deaf.
Right.
But she also assured us that he had been castrated, like you say. And I didn't, I had never adopted a cat before. So I was like, well, that's interesting that he has such gigantic protruding balls, you know, because I guess I figured that they maybe just, that those balls were just dead weight or something, that they had taken care of that. But no, he had balls because he still had his fucking balls. And he grew in... So the stories I've told on Risk about Mr. Pooh, like the two times he sent me to the hospital by, you know, biting into me and blood splattering everywhere, I make those comedies, right? But there came a day... It was after the second time he sent me to the hospital. That one's a funny story because I was right in the midst of a BDSM scene where I was the dom and the fella was blindfolded. And I tried to get Mr. Pooh off the bed when he jumped up and he just sunk those big teeth right through my thumb. And it was like in Monty Python when the blood's just a stream of blood coming out of my thumb, which hit the boy on the bed with the blindfold on in the face, like just blood splattering all over the place. And I started shouting red, which is my safe word. And he's like, What's happening? Your safe word? Why? Yeah, he's just laying on the fucking bed.
he already threw it in the towel. I ain't even, damn, your hands was weak, man.
Totally. I had him take me to the goddamn hospital. But very shortly thereafter, Mr. Pooh got not a UTI. He got crystals in his, it cost me $2,500 to get that taken care of. And then the vet said, the thing of it is, this is more often than not a recurring problem. So if it happens again in within like 6 months, it might be happening like every 6 months. It happened again 6 months later, and I took Mr. Pooh back to the what do you call it? The
shelter,
animal, the shelter that, no, that where man. We for where I first
you took him back, man.
You adopted
the kid, and then you say, "Oh, he's fucked up. Y'all gotta have him back."
When we would take Mr. Pooh to the vet, they would have to put him in a straitjacket. They were afraid of him. Yeah, because he was so muscular. And at some point, we got those balls taken off. But he had grown up with a very ballsy attitude.
See, man.
But you know what? The thing that really sold me, we had Donkey. We had our other white cat. I adopted from the same person. And she was like, yep, he's deaf too. And I dropped my keys as soon as we got Donkey home. And Donkey looks right behind him, like, what just dropped on the floor? I was like, that motherfucking cat is not deaf. Like we thought it would help. We thought it would help if Donkey and Mr. Pooh like could both
two deaf
be deaf
cats together. Yeah.
I don't know what, you know, why we thought
what,
that would.
What would they be talking about?
Well, what they did end up talking about was Mr. Pooh would just beat the ever living shit out of Donkey all the time. So there came that time when I took him to get his UTI or whatever was wrong with his bladder fixed. And so he was gone for several days. I had never seen Donkey happier than when Mr. Pooh was out of the house. So that was what kind of convinced me the next time it popped up. I was like, I've got to take him back. And I have to, the reason I say especially that makes me the bad guy is because, you know, I don't know what his fate was after that, see? You know, being the sort of cat that vets are afraid of.
Yeah, so, man, he's probably fertilizer and shit somewhere.
Yeah,
man.
He's there. He's there with your monkey and or child.
Hey, man, yeah.
I mean, I hate to laugh, but it's that story. See? It's what's funny about that story is, it's kind of horrifying from the beginning.
Okay. Well, I was a weird kid. Wait. Right? This fucking kid.
It's that kind of Edgar Allan Poe thing where it's like, okay, this is kind of creepy right from the start.
So many stories from the funeral home.
Mm.
Some I've told, some I haven't. Because the play... I mean, it was in close proximity, so shit happened, you know?
Yeah.
We used to go in there to cool off in the summertime, but the deal was you couldn't go in there unless you, like, went in a viewing room. So we had to do that. It'd be hot. Oh, it'd be nice in there. Nice and cool. We just closed our eyes. And one of those kids in our group, he was killed on a bicycle right in front of the funeral home.
Oh, God.
That we played in. And, my stepdaddy was in that funeral home. My cousin was in that funeral home. My uncle. These are people, like, behind my house, they're dead in this building behind the house. When we were early teenagers, so some kids were walking through the alley behind the funeral home, and there's a body out there on a gurney. These kids decided, you know what would be funny? Let's push that shit out into the street.
Oh, Jesus God.
And we ran off.
Wow. Yo, what, you were one of those kids?
It's been said, yeah, it's rumored to be, you know, that I was one. Allegedly, man. And, you know, it's, I don't know if it's a special place in hell. We don't know how that was resolved or who had to go out there. What the hell, you know? But, yeah, people did say, you know, that a dead person was hit by a car. And that couldn't be explained, you know, because of the way it was worded.
Yeah, you know?
It became like this weird shit in the community.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you mean a dead guy got...
Yeah, I confess, man.
But that's amazing.
Yeah, the funeral home, all kind of stuff, man. Anyway, it gave stories. You didn't want them.
Yeah, well, you know, we knew my dad just loved to tell stories and laugh, and that's where I got a lot of what I do from. But when he died in 2020, and it was that weird thing where we had to have the funeral during lockdown, so there could only be a few people in the church and all that kind of stuff. So it was really weird. So we needed to find laughs wherever we could. So we're working with this funeral home that has apparently been in the same family in Cincinnati for 150 or so years.
Yeah.
And the guy is telling us, you know, about their long legacy passed down from father to father to father to father. And what we found so goddamn hilarious was that this guy couldn't pronounce the word funeral. He would say, "Welcome to the funeral home. we're gonna put together a really good funeral." So the whole family was just saying funeral. The whole time. It was just so funny that someone whose entire like family history was funerals. he couldn't get the word.
He not a people person shit.
Right, exactly. He's a corpse person.
Yeah, same thing, man. That was a big family affair, that funeral home. They had about 3-4 generations. I went to school with some of the kids. They were my age and a couple of generations of them.
Yeah.
The funeral people, yeah. Manning's Funeral Home. You can go visit it right now.
You know, back when Risk first started, I was invited to be on a storytelling show. So the New York storytelling scene back when Risk started was super poppin'. And I quickly became well-known as, you know, a guy that people liked in the storytelling scene. So I agreed to do this one trick sort of show where popular New York storytellers would swap stories so that I would have to get up and tell someone else's story or something like that. But there came a time in the middle of the show where you got to tell a little story of your own, just a little story of your own. So I told the story, and there was a special guest that night, and it was a psychic. And she was going to have a little something to say about people's little stories, right? So I told the story about how when I was a kid, I got this, I was about 10 years old, and I loved the idea of getting mice. Those little white mice I thought were so cute.
Yeah, man.
And so my dad found, we could afford the mice. Because they're, you know, they were like a buck for a mouse at the, you know, they're the what they're really for is feeding the snakes at the pet store. So anyway, he got me a mouse, but we didn't have a cage. So Dad knew that down in the basement there was an old aquarium that hadn't been used before, but it didn't have a top, so it was really just a glass box without a top. So Dad was like, "I know what we can do. I'm going to take one of the screens that we're not using on one of the screened-in windows and just cut it out and just kind of bend it so that it stays a little bit like a top on top of the aquarium there." Well, I named this mouse Rav, R-A-V, because it was my birthday, my 10th birthday, and my friend Rich was there, and my friend Dan was there, and I was like, "We'll take the first letter of Rich, the second letter of Dan, and the third letter of Kevin, and that's Rav." So I loved Rav, but it was only a couple of days before that little guy, he got into this habit of crawling up his water spout hanging from the top, and then Spider-Man crawling upside down on the screened-in window part up at the top. And I should have tried to figure out a way to not have him doing that, because sure enough, I was either taking a bath or a shower one day, and I came back, and he had been crawling around on the top like Spider-Man and had fallen and broken his neck on his water dish.
No.
And was convulsing. He was convulsing in death throes, and that was traumatic for little me to see. So yeah, me, Dan, and Rich, we decided, well, we've got a bury Rav, and so we put two popsicle sticks together as a crucifix and put him in the ground in the back, and you know, wrote Rav on the cross, and that was that. So, okay, so I tell that little anecdote at this storytelling show, and now it's time for the psychic to say something. And she gets up and she says, Kevin, I just want you to know that Rav, he says, all is forgiven.
Man.
So I finally had some closure about old Rav.
No more guilt. Yeah, right.
Oh, Lord. So, yeah, you know, one thing I love about your Churchill stories is, well, there's a little bit of a gothic thing that sometimes comes into them, you know?
Yeah.
It's, you know, whatever you can say about, yeah, there was a heck of a lot of struggle and poverty, but it sounds like it was also a really like fascinating community to grow up in.
Yeah, that's a word for it. Fascinating. Oh man. Yeah, a couple of times a year you'd see a naked person walking down the street.
Oof.
I didn't know what that was, you know, like it was from the heavens. Now I know what it is. People are schizophrenic, you know.
Yeah.
And they like to walk around naked. For me, it was like, what the universe has given, you know, this is woman, this dude, they're walking down the street naked, you know.
Yeah.
Kids, we're losing our minds.
Yeah.
Somebody should have, you know, they should have been in a facility.
You know? Totally.
Yeah, but nah, they weren't in no facility. They're just walking the streets doing what people do who, well, hell, you see that in the big city, too.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know.
Shit, but back then, we just thought you was weird. You know, or you just mean or some shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
That woman, no clothes on.
I worry. I hope, you know, we're at this stage where, you know, people who are vulnerable are more and more and more vulnerable. So I worry about seeing more of that in wherever we are. Well, that's something. I always love revisiting the Churchill of your childhood.
Yeah.
Do you ever get back there nowadays? I mean,
Whenever I get to Richmond a couple of times a year, I always have to drive by.
Yeah.
And I should be taking pictures. You know, I'm going like, 90% of my stories take place within a 4-block radius.
Mm.
I'm just, my world was small, but a lot of weird shit happened there.
Yeah.
From the dead lady, that's right across from the funeral home.
Right.
All of them stories, pretty much playing with garbage, with trash, right across the street. That was, and you could go on and on, stories that would have embarrassed you. Now that I've gotten older, they just, give you a picture of what the past was like.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's very surreal to revisit my childhood, neighborhoods that I knew in my childhood, because, I don't know, it's like they might look almost the same, but there's just, you feel like you're looking into a place that's just where the spirit of it has gone the way that you knew it, you know?
Yeah, that's the part. It's like you want to point out to people little details that wouldn't mean anything to them, and then you sound like an old man.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like, right there, that's where Johnny was, and right over there, and people are looking at you like, just there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's when you started feeling the age kicking in. Damn, I'm romanticizing a past that's unrelatable.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. Nobody remembers it the way you remember it. And no one cares.
Right. You might as well be describing a dream you had.
Yeah. Mr. Flato. It was right there. Mr. Flato set off those rockets. Okay, Mr. Flato.
Right next to Snuffleupagus.
Yep, right there. It was right there. Such a fond memory for you, man. You can't bring anybody in, you know, to go like, yeah, I see that. Okay. And that's... I find myself doing that more and more, and it's like, that's aging, man.
Yeah, for sure.
You start talking like that. You got too much shit to remember that you want to drop on people, that knowledge that they not, you know, they don't get.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea behind oral history, man. Don't change the names and stuff. Just give it the context it had when you were saying it back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, it sounded corny, but wasn't corny when you said it.
Right,
you know,
right,
give people
right.
a real taste of, you know, how we spoke, how we addressed things, popular culture. But I see a lot of going back in the archives of some show and cleaning up stuff or changing stuff to fit more like what's happening now. And you kind of lose some context of how people thought in the day.
Oh,
because there is a lot of homophobic and misogynistic and other weird shit out there.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Well, we do that on Risk.
Yes.
The reruns that we run on Thursdays, we remove words. Sometimes we remove entire stories from episodes because we know we could just like catch all kind of hell. And now we got to give all kinds of warnings about you might hear this coming up. Yeah.
But you keep it in the archive so somebody in the future will be able to get them jewels the way they actually existed.
Yeah. You know?
It's hard to think about that now. You still don't think you're aging, but shit, man, Kevin, I blinked my eye and fuck, I was gray. You know, when I did the first Risk show, I didn't have a single fucking gray hair on my body.
Yeah, oh no, me neither.
You either.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like, damn, in a blink, I'm the old guy. I was the youngest at everything I ever did.
Yeah.
Always, I was that one. I couldn't get into clubs, couldn't do shit. It was always an issue. Had to get fake IDs, all kind of stuff.
Yeah,
now,
that's funny.
Yeah, I blinked my eye and I'm that dude. I'm looking back.
Absolutely.
Catch you in the ride, man.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, even though it's such an insanely, you know, stressful time right now, it is always good to catch up with you. I mean, what we do does still make a big difference as far as like connecting in a human way, you know, on this show.
Yeah, that's the legacy right there.
Yeah.
That'll always be there.
And that is that. Now, I need to apologize to the entire chimpanzee community. In talking about Alex Wilkie's story, I repeatedly referred to the chimp as a monkey. So I want to formally apologize to the entire chimpanzee and, while we're at it, bonobo diaspora for referring to you as monkeys. While everyone knows, you are great apes, just like gorillas and orangutans and me. Alex Wilkie's story, by the way, is called The Beast, which you can hear on our Best of Funny Stuff #4 episode. And the story I was giving background on my cat, Mr. Pooh, was called Safe Word Red. And that's on our 2019 episode called With the Mystery Box Show. And then Ray mentioned The Dead Lady. That's a story called The Lady, which you'll find on the Best of Risk #15. There'll be links to all of those in the show notes. So a huge thanks to Dr. Ray Christian for coming back to share another great story on Risk. Now, Ray has his own podcast, and it's phenomenal. It's called What's Ray Saying? He shares how his own personal narratives intersect with the larger story of Black culture and history in America. It's fascinating, beautifully produced. It's educational. And Ray is always a delight to listen to. So you can find that and Ray at drraychristian.com. RayChristian.com or on Instagram at RayChristian9789. So let us know what you think of this or any of these conversation style stories we've been having at the Risk Podcast Fans Discussion Group on Facebook or the r/Risk Podcast subreddit, or you can email me directly at kevin@risk-show.com. And if you've got a story that you'd like to share to tell me about animals, pets, whether monkeys or apes, just go to risk-show.com/submissions and send me your pitch, because, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Man.